I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Rebecca Reinhart bucked the Democratic establishment last year when she beat incumbent Alan Butkovitz in the primary to become Philadelphia's controller, the city's top financial watchdog. Her office has been busy in the last 6 months with audits of a number of government departments. I should add there's something like 28,000 employees working for the government here in Philadelphia. It found that there are serious bookkeeping errors amounting to more than $900 million on top of $33 million that was unaccounted for. The audit looked at costs and benefits of the city's 10-year tax abatement policy, and most recently and most explosively, her office examined the government's sexual misconduct policy and procedures and found, quote, it was inadequate, decentralized, and poorly implemented across city departments. The city has paid something like $2.2 million in sexual harassment claims in the last 5 years. Rebecca Reinhart worked for Bear Stearns and Fitch Rating Services before joining the Nutter and Kenney administrations and before being elected controller in November. Rebecca Reinhart, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here. Thank you,
I knew
Marty.
I wanted to talk to somebody this morning, and I'm very glad that it was you.
I'm happy to be here.
For the uninitiated, what does a controller do, especially a government city controller do?
So the controller is the financial watchdog of the city. So it's a separately elected position, and it's the audit function over the city and the school district, as well as the financial watchdog. So according to the city charter, the role of the controller is to make sure that our government, our city government, is running efficiently and effectively.
So looking at all departments, how they spend their money, how they keep track of their money, looking for things like waste, fraud, abuse?
Absolutely, yes. All of the above. The office has about 90 auditors that are in charge of the audit function across the city. And then my office also has a fraud unit to do fraud investigation. And so all of the above. The job is to make the city run better. And there's a lot of work on that front.
So I do want to talk about that.
Right.
But let's begin with your investigation, or essentially your audit of the harassment policies and procedures, the prevention policies, I should say. But why is that the purview of your office, to look at sexual harassment?
You know, it's interesting. Before I took office in January, a few things happened which really started me thinking down the path of that my office should do this. One is that the parking authority, there was some significant sexual harassment occurring at the parking authority by the former executive director, and then there Vince Fenerty, yes, and then there were the accusations against the sheriff in November of last year, and then
that's
Jewel Williams, and then lastly there was a large payout that the city made. $1.25 million that the city paid in this past December, before I took office, to settle a claim against a commander in the police department who was still on the job related to sexual misconduct. And that made me start to think that there's financial exposure associated with sexual misconduct in the workplace. And this is taxpayer money that's being used to settle these claims. And it's not just an issue of worker safety and being, you know, making sure our employees are safe, which is very important to me, but it's also about the financial liability. And that's how it, you know, I was able to take the lead on it.
$2.2 million a payout. Do you think that really represents, this is over the last 5 years,
right,
but do you think that represents how much money's actually been paid out in that time period?
You know, it's interesting because one of the findings of the audit was that it probably does not represent the full scope of what's been paid out, because the tracking system that the law department, the city's law department, uses to track the payouts is inadequate. So that $2.2 million is the amount, the low point of what we believe it is. It could be larger, much larger.
You found a number of things in your audit, your investigation.
Yeah.
One is that, and it, sort of broadly speaking, it sounds like this anti-harassment policy has not been taken particularly seriously in that it is haphazardly applied.
Right. So there has been a policy at the city in the past, but what we found was that the majority of complaints were handled at the department level, and there are 50 departments at the city. So you can imagine the differences in implementation across departments and the differences from documentation to investigation to discipline. And one of the things that we found was that discipline varied greatly between departments for the same offense.
Give us an example.
So, for example, one department could be giving a suspension for a verbal harassment. Another department could be merely issuing a verbal warning for groping. So
are those real examples?
Those are real examples, yes. And then what we found in five departments that were tested, were, you know, if that's the audit word of looking at it, was that lower-level employees in the same department got more severe punishments than senior-level employees, which is backwards. Right. Supervisory employees should be getting harsher punishments, harsher discipline. And I think a lot of that goes back to that there's a potential for bias when the investigator in the department knows the person that is being accused.
Right.
And often those that are being investigated might be higher level, have more connections within the department, and the person making the accusation, making the complaint, doesn't have the same connections.
We mentioned Jewel Williams,
yes.
Sheriff. His department was looked at. You, I believe, Mayor Kenney, have called for him to resign. He has refused to do that, as I understand
That's
it.
That's right.
And it's within his department. He was accused of,
yes.
of misconduct. What can you, as the controller, do? What can you do to move this particular part of your finding forward?
Yeah, this is a difficult one when it's an elected official. So one thing that really was a bit shocking to me as a result of this audit was that the policy as written, the city's sexual harassment policy, says that the results of an investigation need to be presented to the department head. Well, even though the sexual harassment claims were against the department head in this situation, so the claims by several women were against Jewel Williams, there was an investigation done by the Mayor's Office of Labor Relations, and it found the claims to be substantiated. And then it delivered that result to the sheriff himself, which I found just, you know, that makes no sense. So to your question of what can I do about it, you know, I called on him to resign. The thing is, with an elected official, there's not much else that we can do other than say there's an election in May.
And leave it to the voters.
Leave
to
it
decide.
To the voters. There's an election in May, and voters have that power. The people have the power to say we will not stand up for a leader treating employees in this way.
Can you, though? You've called for a number of reforms to deal with the mm-hmm. problems that you found. Is there a reform there that would deal with this particular part of the problem that you found, yeah. which is that it all goes to the top, and if the top is implicated, obviously there's a conflict of interest.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good question, and one that I think we need to sort of brainstorm around what the solution is. I've thought about, well, maybe the solution is to release the, you know, results, either substantiated or unsubstantiated, to the public.
What would it take to do that? Can your office do that?
I mean, yeah, assuming that our, you know, legal law department doesn't have any issue with it, which I don't think it should. It's all but I can't, you know, I do have to check with them before I say for sure. But I actually think that's the way to go. And I did mention that to the mayor as well, that I think that, you know, that could be a way to at least hold an elected official accountable to the people who vote for them.
We're almost up on a break here. You've also called for, I guess, an independent group that would sort of manage some of these claims.
Yeah. So the results of this, I mean, the findings going from, you know, the discipline being uneven to, you know, we also had a phone line. And many of the callers, the phone line was set up for employees to call in. And many of the callers to the phone line said they had filed complaints, but they weren't in the complaints that we were given. So there's two main recommendations coming out of the audit. One is that this needs to be handled centrally. And it needs to be handled centrally from the complaint to the investigation to the discipline. And the other main recommendation is that we need to set up recommended discipline guidelines that are used across departments. So I'm very hopeful that those changes will happen, but, you know, a big change needs to happen.
We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. That's Philadelphia Comptroller Rebecca Reinhart. She has been on the job since early January, the city's financial watchdog, talking about a recent audit of the procedures for reporting sexual harassment and the fact that there's been a significant payout in the last couple of years. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and if you're just joining us, Rebecca Reinhart is our guest. She's the Philadelphia Comptroller, the city's financial watchdog. She recently completed an audit of the policies, procedures for reporting sexual harassment, came up with a number of recommendations, also talking about the financial burden that sexual misconduct puts on the taxpayers. We'll be talking about some other audits and activities of her office, including plans to investigate the Philadelphia Parking Authority and increase transparency when it comes to city spending. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, many ways to join the conversation. Let me read an email from Elizabeth. This is about the harassment policies and payouts. Why are taxpayers paying these claims? Why aren't the perpetrators personally fined for their behavior?
It's a very good question. And I'm not a lawyer, but what the city, like cities across the country, settles claims on behalf of employees for a lot of different behavior. And
misbehavior?
Sorry?
Misbehavior.
Yeah. I mean, if it's, you know, I think about police brutality or you know, there's a lot of different cases. It's a very good question, and one that to me, I feel that if a claim is substantiated, that, you know, first of all, should that employee be even in our workforce, given it's depending on the severity of it.
Right.
And, you know, we shouldn't just be settling as a city just to get rid of the case. But the question is a very good one. And but the city pays close to $40 million a year out in a whole variety of settlements from, you know, slip and fall, like people fall on sidewalks and, you know, or streets and sue the city. You know, it's something that, to me, I think that the city should be taking a more aggressive stance in not settling. Unless there is true, you know, guilt related to something, and then that would make sense.
Is this a discussion with the law department?
Yeah, this is another discussion for another day. But I think the question is also not just why are taxpayers paying these settlements, but in the case of that over $1 million settlement,
right,
that police commander is still on the job in a very senior position. And that shouldn't happen.
You mentioned the fact that you set up a hotline, I guess, to get your own information about what people are reporting about misbehavior in city government. Were there certain trends that you saw or certain sort of narratives that got repeated?
So, you know, I'm really glad we did that, which is set up the phone line, because we got people, you know, employees to actually call in and give us a perspective about how they felt the process was. And one of the findings was that the majority of callers who believed they filed a detailed complaint, right, were not in the records, which showed that the, you know, while the audit found we were given 121 case complaints over 5 years, but the number could be so much greater than that because it seems like departments across the city were not following the documentation policy. I mean, maybe it's someone complained about sexual harassment and a manager went to the supervisor and said, hey, cut it out. That's supposed to be documented. It's not.
This is about 28,000 city employees. I don't know, you know, what is the appropriate, it's not even the word or even acceptable. I mean, one would assume that there are always going to be some problem related to behavior on the job. Is 121 complaints, is that acceptable? Is that too much? Is it too little? Obviously, for the individual person, it's too much.
I actually think that when the city actually fixes this, that we should expect a large spike up in the complaints.
More
people. Absolutely. Because I think that the system's not working right now, that perpetrators aren't being held accountable, that employees are vulnerable, and there's not a clear system, a clear path to report and a path for redress, right? So when that occurs, we should expect a large spike up. And that's what I've been told by people I've spoken to that are in this field.
Your office has called for a more sort of centralized way of making these claims, as I understand it, more standardized guidelines.
Yes.
The ability to report online, I guess, opening that up or making that more accessible to people. A better prevention training program. And again, this need for some kind of an independent group to decide on claims or at least to be able to manage that. Has the city response lined up with those at all?
The city's initial response, that there were a few things done right when my audit findings were announced, my office's findings were announced. And those things, to me, they're not the true fix. But from my conversations with the mayor about what the true fix is, I'm hopeful that we can do it, you know, this fall. I mean, to me, it's there is already a very small unit in the mayor's office that is capable of handling this type of complaints and is trained in this. And part of our audit was looking at that group's, the quality of their investigation, and overall it met standards. So the idea would be to increase the staffing and size of that group to handle all of it. And it's something that I think it absolutely needs to be centralized or it just won't function properly.
An email from Thomas. Is there a procedure to impeach Philadelphia elected officials? Would sexual misbehavior be an impeachable offense? If not, why not? As you mentioned, you're not a lawyer.
Right, right.
But your audit, your findings raise a whole host of these kinds of questions.
Yeah, I don't think for a separately elected official, I have not heard impeachment as an as an option, although it's an interesting question. I think the question could also be, you know, how do we increase the pressure to resign? I mean, this should be the fact that the claim was substantiated to me is a really big deal. And there was a payout at the state when Joel Williams was a state rep. There was a payout related to a sexual harassment claim. About, I think it was $30,000 was paid out. So I don't think there's an it's really about the pressure should be ramped up and there's an election in May. But there should be pressure.
Let me just reintroduce you. That's Rebecca Reinhardt. She's Philadelphia controller, and as such, she is the city's financial watchdog. We've been talking about an audit of some of the policies, procedures for reporting sexual harassment, some of the financial burdens that sexual misconduct has put on the taxpayers in this city, talking about that, and also talking about some of the other audits that her office has been doing as well. And again, you can join us 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You worked in both the Nutter and the Kinney administration.
Right.
So it's not like you're an outsider to government, but you've got a different job now as the controller. Any surprises for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I was the treasurer for 2 years under Mayor Nutter, and then the budget director for five, and then was the chief administrative officer under Mayor Kenney, which was in charge of the back office function of the city for a year before I resigned to run for office. You know, one of the things, so I was aware coming into this role that there was a lot of things that needed to get fixed at the city. And that's one of the reasons why I decided to run for office was because I realized that, you know, I had very senior positions for two different mayors. But if I wanted to make the change that I thought needed to happen, I had to run for office. So I was aware of a lot of the issues. One thing that did surprise me coming into this role, which is, you know, the audit function, from some of the transition team work, I had very senior level officials from Ernst & Young and Deloitte & Touche on my transition team because I wanted their input from an accounting and auditing standards point of view. And they reviewed through the transition period all of the different areas that the controller's office does on a pro bono basis, they did. And, you know, one of the things that really surprised me is the weaknesses in internal controls.
Oh.
And that was one of the audits released by my office. And that really was surprising. It's something that, you know, as budget director, I handled the budget. As treasurer, I handled the bond issues. I was never involved or aware of these issues on the accounting side that through, you know, my new role, I've gotten so engrossed in.
Well, let me read some of the findings.
Sure.
And this is looking at these internal controls. The material weaknesses resulted in $33.3 million being unaccounted for in the city's largest cash account and $924 million in undetected material misstatements that occurred in the preparation of the city's financial reports. Just to translate that, we're talking bookkeeping here?
Yes, yes. The $924 million is bookkeeping errors, not money missing, to
right.
be clear. But
nonetheless,
it's a big deal.
Troublesome.
It's a big deal. And the thing is that this isn't what we found was that this didn't just happen. Many of these findings have been going on in terms of weaknesses and internal controls have been going on year after year and not been remedied by the accounting function under and, you know,
so under,
under
your
finance.
Predecessor?
It's under the finance director. A lot of this started under the previous administration. I think that what it shows, though, is – and the $924 million in errors are errors that were in the financial statements presented to my office as the auditor. So as the auditor, we should expect to make some – you know, find some errors around the edges, but not $924 million.
Are we talking computational errors or things in the wrong boxes?
Right, things in the wrong money booked to one account should have been gone to another account. You know, as a revenue versus an expense, like, you know.
But this is basic computation,
yes.
or accounting,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. And so, and it's fixable. But when we looked at it's fixable. What I would say is it needs to be taken really seriously.
Right.
And there needs to be more staffing among the accounting department and an increase in technology. I mean, many of the accountants are still using Lotus 1-2-3.
Well, I was going to ask because I know computing and government's
right,
offices
right.
in
yeah.
Philadelphia. So I don't know how far back is Lotus 1-2-3. I don't even know.
Lotus 1-2-3 was was before Excel.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, is that part of the problem? Is just
yeah.
clunky old computers?
Well, part of the problem is, you know, using functions that just don't make sense mm-hmm. to be used anymore. And then part of the issue is that there's been a real reduction in accountants in the accounting department under finance. And there needs to be more quality control. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what needs to happen.
You did look at other cities.
Yeah.
So what's a city that Philadelphia can model itself after in terms of fixing this?
Well, it's really interesting because what we found looking at the 10 largest cities was that Philadelphia was the worst in terms of internal controls. dead last. New York, Chicago, Houston, they had zero. So we had two material weaknesses and eight significant deficiencies. And I know this sounds sort of, you know, maybe wonky and sure. technical, but what these things are weaknesses and controls. And they had zero and we had 10. We had two material weaknesses and eight significant deficiencies. So if you look at what Chicago, New York, I mean, it's possible. They're huge cities and they're doing it. So we can do this too. And this is an audit, the audit of internal controls, which my office must by law do each year. So we'll be back. And this right. is what, this is what, you know, I've been saying is that we'll be back. It'll be, you know, we'll be back to do this audit to be released in this next June. And there better be some improvement because taxpayers deserve this. I mean, you know, we're all as taxpayers, we're all giving our money to the city, so it needs to be looked after.
And just a quick follow-up. If we're talking about $924 million, that's almost $1 billion undetected misstatements. So it's not like the money is missing. It's just in the wrong category. But there is this $33.3 million that's unaccounted for.
Right.
Is that missing? Is that another word for missing?
I would say they're synonyms. There has been a big debate around this. Or, you know, to me, so the $33 million, the one of the account, the biggest cash account of the city, where all of the revenue comes in, and even bond money. There's, it's called the consolidated cash account. It wasn't reconciled. It's supposed to be reconciled daily. Right. It wasn't reconciled for almost 3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
Something is supposed to happen every day.
Yes. Yes. And so when it was finally done, what was found was that what the book said should be in the account is $33 million greater than what's in the bank account. So to me, I call that missing until it's found. Right. I think that it could be in another account, and that would be a best case scenario, or it could be that you know, a wide number of errors put together, just book errors put together, equal to $33 million. Or it could be worse. I don't think, I mean, my office did open a fraud investigation, not because we believe there to be fraud, but just because, you know,
we red flags, right?
Right. We need to do everything possible. But the city, the mayor on that point, the mayor, the finance director have, put together a detailed plan. They've hired a firm to go through and look at every day to figure this out. And they've started reconciling on a daily basis. So I'll give them, you know, credit where credit is due to, you know, start to fix that.
Are you all on the same team, the mayor's office, the finance director, and your office?
Well, my office is the independent
watchdog.
So I have to be independent, but I would say that on that point, I think that they put together a good plan to address it. I think on the $924 million in errors, that one, you know, I hope at this point that that they see the seriousness of that. There's been dependence on my office to fix the books.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, so that's wondering what it is. That. I mean, because it comes in, the books come in with all these significant errors, and then the auditors in the controller's office fix everything. But the auditor is supposed to audit, not supposed to put the books together. So that's really where I'm trying to push.
Let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. Let me just read a tweet from Brandon, recently moved to Philadelphia, learning about our officials, listening to the controller. I'm impressed. Keep up the good work. So there you go,
you.
Rebecca Reinhart. We're going to take that short break and then get back to our conversation. Again, she is a Philadelphia City Controller, talking about a number of investigations, audits that her department has been doing. She's got some others planned for the next couple of months as well. You can join us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Rebecca Reinhart. She worked for Bear Stearns and Fitch Rating Services. She also joined or worked in both the Nutter and the Kenney administrations here in Philadelphia. And come November, she was elected city controller. And we're talking about or have been talking about a number of audits that her department has been doing. Let me get Samantha from Chads Ford to join us on Radio Times. Samantha, go ahead. You're on the air.
I can barely hear you.
Okay, well, go ahead. If you just shout it out.
Hello?
There. We seem to be having some problems.
Hello?
With our phone. I'm going to pull Samantha down. She says, why isn't there a list of officials who have had to use taxpayer money for sexual harassment payouts? I would like to see that.
Mm.
Rebecca, is that public? Is that publicly known?
So our audit only found the sexual harassment complaints against substantiated claims against Joel Williams.
Right.
We were not on the payout list. There was no other elected official at the city level. But I think that to Samantha's point, I think that people should know that. And I think that I think that is about transparency. I think that people should know about it. And, I think it's something that I'll continue or I'll start to the discussion with the law department about.
How much clout do you have? Maybe you'll find out, right?
Yeah, I guess I'll find out. You know, look, I'm the city controller is elected citywide. So I have some clout that way. But, Philadelphia is also, a big political structure and establishment to try to change. It's like trying to change a big ship.
A big ocean liner. An email from Don. Great conversation today. The city administrative management needs the ability to terminate employees not working up to acceptable standards. $900 million of reporting errors is an embarrassment to whoever is responsible. Do you agree?
I agree that it's I think of it that way.
As absolutely. An embarrassment.
I do, yeah. I think that it's ridiculous. It's just like, to me, we need to get it together.
Right.
And we expect people to pay their taxes, then we should actually handle the money properly. This isn't a new problem at the city, what the audit found, but it needs to get fixed. Right. And I think that by airing the issues, and not everyone agrees with me that's an elected leader. That's
for sure.
Of course
not.
But I think by saying, here are our issues, let's put them out there and then let's fix them. And, that's the way that we're going to move forward.
Just a quick follow-up here. You mentioned a couple of cities, New York and Chicago being two of them that do obviously a much better job. Everything seemed to be okay in these internal audits. How complicated would it be to go up there? What do they do? And then make it happen.
And replicate it. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And that's something it's just a really good idea. I think I'll write it down. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think we shouldn't recreate the wheel when we don't have to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're doing an audit of the Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services. This is something that's ongoing, which raises the question, why this particular department, how your department decides on which audits to do. Are there red flags or it's, the time is right to do it?
Yeah.
It's been many years. How do you decide?
Probably all of the above. Behavioral health is an area that came to my attention when I was budget director, actually, because the vast majority of funding comes from the state and federal governments. The budget for behavioral health is about $1.6 billion a year. That's billion. And when I was budget director, it would come up because during the recession, it was always said to me, don't cut behavioral health, because if we cut $1 of city money, we're going to lose, $8 to $10 of state and federal money. But because of that, it seemed like no one was really doing a deep dive into it.
Hmm. Kind of hands off?
Yeah, it almost seemed like it was falling into this quasi area between the state and the city and the feds. And it hasn't had a performance audit in close to 20 years.
Oh, well. So they're due.
It's due, right. And so $1.6 billion, I mean, if you think about that level of spending, and it's all given to nonprofits throughout the city to administer services. Are those nonprofits, you know, are we selecting nonprofits based on performance? Are, you know, thinking about the opioid epidemic,
right,
and, you know, the gun violence and the trauma of gun violence, and we have that amount of money. Is that being used appropriately? I think it's really important.
And from your, as an auditor, as someone who audits books, is it that there are, how do you determine if the money is well spent? Obviously,
yeah,
there's an opioid crisis. There is a gun crisis in the city.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know whether we're getting the investment return?
Mm-hmm. So from a performance audit perspective, first, you know, my auditors are going in to, and I don't want to disclose too much because the providers are probably listening on the, but we're looking for, you know, billing issues. We're looking for, are, you know, even some basic things like are the, if they're claiming that they have X number of people coming each day, are they actually coming? I mean, these are things that haven't been looked at. So the next level will be, how do you measure success, which is very difficult.
It is very difficult.
And is success, you know, that's something I can't answer yet. You know, but I think at the basic level, it's, are they actually providing services? How are they selected? Are they being selected based on, you know, are we giving the same amount of money to a provider, whether or not they have beds filled? While there's a waiting list somewhere else, that type of thing.
When do you expect to have a result or have your audit done?
This fall.
This fall?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
A tweet from Jason regarding Department of Licenses and Inspections Code Enforcement Unit. I urge Rebecca Reinhardt an online basis to perform an audit, who are independently, basically saying, look at L&I,
yeah,
and take a look and see if they're doing the kind of job they should be doing. Yes?
No? L&I is on our short list.
Right.
Yeah.
Who is not on your list?
Well, so I would say that there's a few areas, I think. Behavioral health, you know, behavioral health and the sexual harassment were the two audits that my office embarked on first. Parking authority is another one we'll probably talk about. But then there's a few issues. When something keeps coming up, like L&I, revenue collection, that type of thing, it gets on our list, and then we have to decide.
And that's Rebecca Reinhardt. She's the city controller here in Philadelphia, talking about some of the work that her office has been doing. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We've mentioned the PPA, Pennsylvania Parking Authority, a couple of times. And Vince Fennerty, who was the former or was the executive director, there were harassment claims against him. He's no longer there. Your office is looking at on-street parking expenses.
Yes.
Do I have that right? Why that?
Because the parking authority collects about $130 million a year of the city, of people's parking,
right,
tickets and booting fees and meter rates. Right. And then the parking authority pays its expenses, the on-street parking, it's called, their expenses. And then the city gets $35 million a year plus an escalator. And then the school district gets the remainder.
Right.
So every dollar that is not spent on parking authority on-street expense goes to the school district. And I think it's very important to make sure that we're spending, the PPA, the parking authority is spending appropriate levels so that the money that should be going to the schools is going to the schools.
Well, so $130 million a year, 35 goes to the city. That leaves 95 split between the parking authority and the district?
So there is $35 million plus an escalator. So there's like a...
What is an escalator? I mean, is that an actual escalator?
It's like an index adjustment.
Okay.
So it grows to maybe $40 million. It goes 36. It grows a little bit each year. The school district ends up getting between $10 and $13 million a year. That's why, yeah. So that's why.
Shockingly low, it seems.
I believe so, yes. I believe so. And I think that we need to look to make sure that staffing levels are appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the the parking authority has historically been a place where Republicans and Democrats alike, who are politically connected, can find someone a job very easily.
Patronage.
Right? Yes. And I think, you know, if that's happening, if the staffing is too high at the expense of the school kids, that's not right. So that's why I'm looking at that.
Are you also, is your office also working with the state auditor general?
Yes, we are.
So
we are.
It's a group.
Yeah, well, it's an audit conducted by my office, but we, I have a very good working relationship with Eugene DePasquale, the state auditor general, and his office conducted audits on different areas this past year. And so we've met and we continue to meet to make sure there's no duplication. But he didn't cover the on-street parking expense, so that's the area that I want to look at.
Should they be quaking in their boots at the PBA?
Look, if you know, they've said to me that they've made improvements. So look, I said to them, if there are improvements, I'll give you credit for them. I'm not I just think there's too many questions around it not to audit it. And the city controller's office hasn't audited the parking authority since 2009. So it's time.
It's time. It's almost time. Almost a decade.
Yeah.
An email from Tom, as someone who is active in monitoring, blah, 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 funds for Superstorm Sandy, I've learned that the tone starts at the top. Additionally, transparency and accountability is required on all levels. There should be definitive measures for those individuals who continue to be noncompliant. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, what you're doing for the city, people are doing for businesses and other government agencies across the country.
Right.
But transparency, I know that's a big thing for you.
It is. It is. I think that one thing that I saw running for office and talking to people from West Philadelphia, Northeast Philadelphia, all over, was that people didn't know where the money was going. And I don't think that's right, you know? So I think that people, and I'm a bit of an idealist in this, but that the lack of trust of people to government has to do with a lack of transparency and a lack of saying, this is what you paid in, this is what you're getting for it, and this is where our issues are, and this is what we're working on. So transparency is a big thing to me.
I mean, should people in Philadelphia know where every dollar is spent?
Pretty much so.
I mean, be able to look into the books as you do?
I think they should. And except for certain situations, right, like witness protection fees to individuals, of course we shouldn't, you know, of course we need to protect people. So there are certain categories that would be sort of deleted out, names, identifiers. But I think some cities have released full expenditure data in a usable format. And that's something that I just asked about this morning, actually. Where are we with that? I would like to push out the city's expenditure data so people can see, you know, and even see, like, well, what is the city spending on this contract? Or why is this department paying more for the same vendor than the other department? That type of thing.
Let me ask you about another thing. This is the 10-year tax abatement policy. Mm-hmm. Your office looked at this, and this has helped in many ways, I think, to create this kind of boom in downtown Center City, Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are costs and benefits. What was the I guess, analysis of your audit?
Yeah, so on the tax abatement, that was a financial analysis, and that was done because a lot of people in the city are really frustrated, in the neighborhoods are really frustrated with the tax abatement, because the perception is that, and what the analysis found was that it's somewhat justified, is that the people, sort of wealthier people or people that are new to the city, are the ones benefiting from this tax abatement, while taxes keep going up, and it's going onto the shoulders of those longtime residents and homeowners. What the analysis showed, so the question is, do we still need the abatement the way we once did?
Right.
And what the analysis found was that the vast majority of the city is still unprofitable to build in, and so the abatement is still necessary in the majority of the city. Greater Center, the Center City area, just what you'd think, right? Center City plus Northern Liberties, Fishtown, Point Breeze, and a bit of Chestnut Hill, Mount Airy are profitable. The rest of the city still is not. But I do think that there is a fairness issue. We did find that, looking at it by ownership, that properties valued over $700,000 represented 7% of the abated properties, but 51% of the value of the benefit. And that's where it comes into maybe we need a cap, a per unit cap or something, to make it a bit fairer.
So benefits more going to the top,
yes.
Whereas people who don't have new structures living in their
right.
same old house they've been living in for decades,
right.
they don't get the benefit.
Right, right. right.
What was, and we're almost out of time here. Response to this finding on the tax abatement. Is there interest, you think, in the city to?
Yeah, I think there's two proposals floating in city council. I think that there's likely to be interest in the fall. But, my job as controller, what I want to do with this is say, here's some independent research. I mean, all the research up to this point has been done by people with an interest in the fight, and either the, developers or other advocates. And so what I wanted to do was say, here's research so that we can make an educated decision going forward.
Well, Rebecca Reinhardt, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks
on
for
Radio
having
Times,
me, Marty.
Talking about dollars and cents here on Radio Times. And she is Philadelphia City Controller, talking about a number of audits that her office has been doing and some really significant findings as well. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. And you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us.